I'm Bo Griffey. I'm an account manager with U.S. Energy Services, headquartered in the Minneapolis area. We're a nationwide energy management firm working on the supply side for our customers. We don't do a lot of things behind the meter, but we manage fuel supply plans from typically the wellhead to the customer's door for natural gas, for instance, or in the case of power, electricity, or electrons on the wholesale or retail market where there's competitive pricing available. And I spend a good deal of my time evaluating environmental markets and assets for customers.
Great. Thanks, Paul. Well, for starters, we just wonder if you can give us a quick update on where things are currently at the American Power Act.
Yeah, we've hit sort of a road bump with the American Power Act. They lost a key sponsor, Senator Graham, in about April timeframe of this year. They did roll out some of the legislation, Lieberman and Kerry did, but it's been sort of sidetracked with the political debate with health care and jobs, financial reform, immigration, some other issues. So currently as it stands now, I don't think there's political will to pass a comprehensive energy reform package this year. What they're currently considering in the Senate is a scaled-down energy bill, which would include things such as offshore drilling provisions or bans, and or converting vehicles to natural gas from diesel or gasoline, more commonly referred to as the Pickens plan, minus the wind portion of the Pickens plan. So that's what they're really focused on now. It's doubtful this year that we're going to get significant climate change legislation through, and it's not certain, depending the election returns in November, where it's going to be headed. I think we're going to get something sooner or later, but it's just unclear at this point.
Considering the information that was you just presented, what do you feel are the key components to upcoming legislation that would reduce carbon emissions?
Well, I think the key to this whole marketplace and controlling carbon in a free market type of a system, or using that mechanism as opposed to a tax, is having a fair price on carbon, or having an efficient price on carbon. And by pricing carbon into the economy, thereby you create an incentive to be a less intense CO2 emissions organization. So it's going to be critical that they establish that price in a fair and free market standpoint. I think we're leaning that direction. I think a carbon cap or carbon tax program is probably politically dead just because it has the word tax in it at this point. There's a lot of arguments that it may be more efficient than a carbon cap and trade type of a program, but I think we will get that passed at some point. It may be a utilities-only bill in the very beginning with industry phased in over a period of time. Traditionally, it's been a four-year phase-in in some of the previous bills that have been announced. It may be much longer than that, and or the cap may be a lot higher. In the past, the cap for participation in cap and trade was 25,000 metric tons a year of annual emissions equivalents. It may be higher than that in the future. So that's kind of the things that I see. The second thing as far as what future regulation could look like in the industry is the EPA is considering what's called the tailoring rule right now, which would modify the Clean Air Act as it exists to cover greenhouse gas emissions at stationary combustion sources. And this is rising out of a 2007 Supreme Court case with the U.S. versus the state of Massachusetts. And actually, it was a case to regulate tailpipe emissions or vehicle emissions in the state, and it's grown since then. And the EPA has taken that as their regulatory authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. What people need to know in the food industry is I think it's not likely to cover most food manufacturing facilities unless they're really large and have a significant emissions factor, say 75,000 to 150,000 tons per year of annual CO2 emissions equivalent. And that would be a really large facility. I'm not saying none of them we cover, but the majority probably would not be. That's going to go into effect for utility sources, I think, January 1st of 2011. And then there would be some more phase-in down the road. But that's the second regulation piece outside of a legislative process that could be taking place here.
Given that there is no legislation in place requiring businesses to reduce their carbon emissions, what are some ideas or starting points for food manufacturers who are interested in reducing carbon emissions on their own accord?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things, too, in particular that food manufacturers need to consider. One is they need to have an understanding of where the greenhouse gas emissions are now. So set a good baseline. I think a common year is 2005. Look at your 2005 energy spend and consumption and get a good baseline on your direct and some significant indirect emissions. So direct emissions would be any direct fossil fuel consumption or combustion, natural gas, fuel oil, coal, any direct fossil fuel combustion. The second I would look at would be significant indirect sources, which would be purchased electricity and things like that. And that's not likely to be covered directly under a federal scheme, but if we were to get, for instance, to get cap and trade with only utility sectors included, it's very likely it would impact your bill or your energy spend significantly. So you want to have a good idea of the energy intensity of the power that you're purchasing from the grid or generating on your own if you have a cogeneration plant or something. So you can make smart decisions in the future in capital budgeting as you move down the road here. Okay, the second step I would say food manufacturers should take just to get themselves prepared for a future cap-and-trade environment or greenhouse gas or constrained greenhouse gas market, for instance, would be to make sure that they're including an evaluation of any environmental assets or liabilities that arise from efficiency projects or any capital budgeting decisions they're making to their process. Because if in some cases, if you say you entertain a $20 million capital project to create some energy efficiencies within your facility and it has significant greenhouse gas reductions associated with it, there could be an environmental asset associated with that that could help put the internal rate of return over the internal threshold to make the project go. And there's a number of different programs out there from tax credits to carbon credits to a number of different environmental assets can be associated with these projects, rebates, number of things. So I would carefully consider those, and I would recommend that they talk to an advisor, one, to help them get a surety of their greenhouse gas footprint now and to make sure it's accurate, verifiable, and they have a process in place to monitor it going forward. And two, to make sure they have a sounding board on environmental markets to know what is a transactable commodity and what that value may be of any project they undertake in the future.
If you're interested in identifying ways to reduce your carbon emissions, or if you'd like to learn more about reducing energy costs through strategic energy management, please visit usenergyservices.com.